There's currently a commercial that's running on TV. It's of a running back for the Oakland Raiders, soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders. His name is Josh Jacobs. And Josh Jacobs, in this commercial, he's driving in this car, and he's talking about what he would tell himself when he was a kid if he had the chance to go back and talk to himself. Now, for those who don't know anything about this young man, he was homeless when he was in middle school. And lived on the streets for several years, homeless, and then eventually started playing football, got a scholarship to Alabama, and was drafted first or second round by the Raiders, and now is making a lot of money in the NFL. And as they were interviewing him, he was talking about how important it was to him to never forget where he came from and to never forget how he started, because he really wants to give back to the community and help people that were in similar situations to him. And he talks about in some of these interviews the fact that, you know, the difference in being homeless and being in the NFL for him was really a football tryout. It was that minor a thing. You know, he said, if I hadn't have made that team, I'd probably, they'd tell him where I'd be now. And so he talked about the importance of knowing where you come from. And so I was thinking, okay, I want to do something with that. I want to do something with that. And then yesterday I got to do a funeral doubleheader, which I don't get to do very often, but I had a funeral in the morning for Miss Gladys Winstead and then a funeral in the afternoon for Miss Myrtle Smartnick. And so I was like, I kind of want to do something on kind of talk about that. And then lo and behold, there was a perfect passage that kind of came up that we're going to look at this morning. Ephesians chapter 2. We're going to start in verse 1. And this text really kind of plays to both of those concepts. And so I want to use this text this morning as Paul talks about our former state and our current state and how Christ has impacted that. So he says in verse 1 of Ephesians chapter 2, he says, and you, now he's talking to the Ephesian church, he says, and you were dead in your trespasses and sin, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air and of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. So he kind of starts by reminding the people in the church. He says, you guys used to be dead. Now, I find that fascinating that Paul wants to remind these people of the condition they used to be in. What happens to people when they forget their past? Well, they generally repeat it. They generally repeat it. When we do not remember our past or our background, we tend to make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And one of the things that I think is really significant for Christians, and maybe this is endemic in the modern church because a lot of us grew up in church, and so we don't necessarily identify with this. But for the Ephesian people, what Paul is trying to remind them of, he says, you guys remember when you were spiritually dead? Now, if I ask you this morning, if any of you could think back to a time in your life when you were spiritually dead, probably a fair number of you could go, yeah, there was a season, there was a time. Some of you, it might have been short. Some of you, it might have been significant. Some of you might not have grown up in the church. Some of you might have grown up in the church and then kind of for a season in life, kind of got away from it. But I would guess that even if there are relatively short periods, a lot of us in this room can probably identify with a time, however brief, that we were spiritually dead. And so that is what Paul is doing here. He is talking to the Ephesian people. He says, I want you guys to remember what it was like to be spiritually dead. Now, this is a motivator because Paul said, I want you to remember how it felt to be separated from God, to have no spiritual hope, no spiritual identity. And we encounter people all the time that seem to have everything going for them, and yet something's not right. They feel lost. They feel disconnected. They feel like there's something they're missing. They're constantly trying to fill that void with stuff. Any of you ever sat in your chair and thought, I'm hungry? And so you walk in the kitchen, You walk in the kitchen and there's food everywhere, right? And I've done this. It's like I'll go in the kitchen. I'll be sitting in my recliner and I'll be, I'm hungry. And somebody, one of my family will say, well, the kitchen's right there. So I'll go in the kitchen and I'll open the refrigerator and I'll stand there with the door open and I'll just kind of go shelf by shelf. No, 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 I don't want that. It's a kitchen, you know, the thing's full of food, but none of it's what I want, right? So then I go to the cupboard. Yeah, and or is that what it's called, the cupboard? Pantry? Pantry. If you knew the conversation we'd had about the difference in a pantry and a cupboard in my house the other day. So I went to that door where the food is behind it. And I opened the door and I'm like, chips? No, don't want those chips. Don't want those chips. Don't have any dip for those chips. No, I don't feel like popcorn. No, those will burn my mouth. Those are Caleb's. You know, and I'll just kind of, and you'll stand there and you want something, right? And you got a kitchen full of food. But you know what you can't find? You can't find what you want. None of it is what you're hungry for. I kind of think that's how a lot of people in this world live and why they're constantly seeking. They know something's missing. They've got money. They've got prestige. They've got comfort. I mean, they've got everything you would think they want. And yet they're constantly trying to find something else. And they're constantly trying to fill that void with stuff that doesn't fill the void. And you know what I mean? When you're sitting there and you grab something, you start eating, you're like, that's not what I want. By the way, if you want to know what this really looks like, come tonight and watch two different groups of people at 7 o'clock try to decide where they're going to go eat. It is some of the greatest comedy you will ever witness. Let's go eat here. Oh, I don't want that. Well, let's go there. I had that yesterday. I mean, it's just you watch a group of adults cannot decide what they want to eat. By the way, it's one of the most fantastic things you'll ever witness. And this is coming from a guy who will eat anywhere most of the time. So Paul is kind of reminding these people, there was a time when you were spiritually dead, when there was something in you that was disconnected from God. And so he says, you weren't right. I want you to remember back to what that was. So he says, this is how you formerly walked according to the course of the world, according to the prince of the power of the air. He's talking here about Satan, the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. He says, you remember what it was like to be out in the world and to try to find all this stuff that was going to make you happy, and none of it made you happy because you were chasing things of this world that were never designed to fill the hole that in your life that God is supposed to fill. He said, so you've got that problem and you've kind of forgotten what that's like, and you need to remember you used to be spiritually dead. Okay? In verse 3 he says, among them, we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature, I love this term, children of wrath, even as everybody else. Have any of you ever been a child of wrath? I know you're probably not supposed to say this, but I had so much fun yesterday visiting with people at those funerals. Especially, we were at Miss Myrtle's funeral, and I had a chance to visit with Mike Caton. Now, those of you who don't know Mike and I used to work camp together. Mike was the minister at Rosemary for many years. Now he's down in Ponzer. If those of you who don't know where Ponzer is, I don't know how to describe it. But Mike and I used to work camp for David Mason, and Mike was the dorm dad, and I was the rec director. And one year, now this is when Myrtle ran the camp kitchen with an iron fist. Now, what people don't realize the kitchen now is named Smart Nicole. And what people don't realize is the dining part of the kitchen was named after Richard, but the cooking part of the kitchen was named after Myrtle, because that was her domain. David comes up, David and a guy by the name of Bobby Jean Waters, they come up to us on Thursday morning and said, we've got a great idea. Once the kids go to bed tonight, we are going to have seafood. Everybody pony up some cash. We're going to go to the seafood market. We're going to buy some fresh seafood. We're going to cook it after the kids go to bed, and we're going to eat shrimp and crabs and scallops. I mean, it's going to be great. We've caught some fish out in the river. It's going to be amazing. By the way, I did not eat fish caught in that river. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. And so I said, where are y'all going to cook all this seafood? And they were like, in the kitchen. And I said, in Myrtle's kitchen? You're going to cook seafood in Myrtle's kitchen. I'm not going to be in there. You had to bring it to me. I hope there's delivery. You bring it to me. So me and Mike are both telling them this is not a good idea. Now, I ate the seafood. I'm not going to lie. I want to fast forward to Friday morning. About 6:30, I have entered the cafeteria during the breakfast preparation to get a cup of coffee. As I enter into the facility, there stands Myrtle. She had a pot in her hand, one of those long-handled pots, and she's waving it at me. And she said, who did it? And I went, Bobby Jean and David. Now, I rolled on them so fast. I didn't even have to think about it. I was not getting hit with that pot. And I rolled on them. And they had spent an hour in there cooking seafood for me. And I rolled on them like a chump. I gave them up. Mike Caton walked in a few minutes later. And she pointed the pot. She didn't even have to ask. He said, Bobby Jean, David Mason. We rolled on them in a hurry. To this day, I'm not sure they ever found Bobby Jean's body. I don't know what Myrtle did to him, but I would tell you, I laugh so hard. And you know why I could go to a funeral and tell those stories and laugh? Because Bobby Jean was the child of wrath, and I was not. That's why I could laugh about that story. Paul says there was a time when you guys were spiritually dead, and because you were spiritually dead, what that made you in the eyes of God, you were the child of wrath. You were the one who was going to have to be punished for your transgressions. You were going to pay the price. God's wrath for the sins of the world were going to fall on you. Because of your spiritual separation from him, because you were spiritually dead, you were, by definition, the one who was going to have to pay the price. Somebody has to pay. When you cook seafood in Myrtle's grease, somebody has to pay. And I'm not him. When we violate God's laws, when we sin against God, somebody has to pay. And so Paul says, this is who you are. And by the way, some of you may be sitting in this room right now thinking, oh my gosh, that's me. I'm not in a relationship with Christ. I would be that spiritually dead person, which means I'm the child of wrath. Oh my gosh, that's me. And so Paul says, this is what you were. You were dead in your transgressions. You were spiritually separated from God. You were dead in your trespasses, and as a result of that, you were a child of wrath. That's what you were. Verse 4. But then Paul says this. He said, but God, being rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he loved us. And we spent the last several weeks talking about love. He says, because of this great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, made us alive together with Christ. Now I want to stop right there just so you have some context for what that means. Okay. At Easter, we celebrate this incredible thing that happened. What do we celebrate at Easter? The resurrection, right? We celebrate the resurrection. The resurrection is this event where Jesus was dead, but then he was brought back to life. And so we celebrate the resurrection. According to Paul, we have likewise been resurrected. He said, you used to be dead. Now, what? You're alive. Well, if you used to be dead and now you're alive, what must have happened? You've been resurrected. And that's exactly what Paul says here. He says, but God, because he's rich in mercy and because of the incredible amount of love he has for you, when you were dead in your transgressions, when you were a child of wrath and you were dead and disconnected from God, when that moment took place, God, by his love and his mercy, made us alive with Christ. Which means, if you were formerly dead, and now Christ has made you alive, then by definition, what has he done? He has resurrected you. Now, how cool is that? We use a lot of terminology. When we talk about church, we use words like saved. We use that word a lot. We were saved. Oh, when did you get saved? That's a lot of people's word. I think there's a better word. You weren't just saved. You were resurrected. God actually came in to you because you were dead, and he actually, literally, according to Paul, restored your dead soul to life. And so yesterday I'm sitting in those two different funerals. I'm sitting in Miss Glass's funeral, and it was funny because when Tony was speaking in the funeral, Tony said, anytime we had a revival speaker, Miss Gladys fed him. And I remember, yep, I did revival at Beaver Dam. First night of revival, I'm eating supper at Miss Gladys's house. And that was so much fun. I've never seen so much food. Because it's just me and Tony. You know, it's just me and Tony and her. It's not like there was 40 people there. I've never seen so much food in my life. And I looked at Tony when she went in the kitchen. And I said, Tony, did she cook all this food? Because I'm a big fella. And Tony goes, nah, she cooks like this for skinny people too. And then he told me, he said, you know why she cooked all this food? I said, no. He said, so she can invite other people over to help her finish it, which he talked about in the funeral yesterday, which I thought was really funny. But you know, I remember going to her house and eating at that table during revival. And I did revival twice there and went to her house and ate both times. And I remember at the other funeral talking about, you know, having all these memories of Myrtle and being at the camp with her. And one of the things that just kind of occurred to me is, as I was thinking about this sermon, is like, those services yesterday were not celebrations of someone's death. They were celebrations of someone's resurrection. And here's the thing. We go, oh, and then after they die, well, they're going to be resurrected. No, that's actually not right. They've already been resurrected. Their spirit was resurrected from the dead the day they accepted Christ as their Savior. Paul says, you were dead, but because of his love and his great mercy for you, God has made you alive again. And by the way, the people he's talking here to are not dead physically. They're not, this is not people in the afterlife. He's talking in present tense to people who are physically alive. You have already been resurrected. You were dead. He has made you alive. Now, why did he do that? Because he loves you. Because of this incredible love he has for you. He says, because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our transgressions, he made us alive together with Christ. That's pretty amazing when you think about it. And so as we sit here today, you know, we're kind of in a couple of states. And again, not my place to go through and individually judge people in the room, but we kind of exist in one of two states. As we're in this room today, you either fall into the category of those who were dead and have been resurrected because of Christ's great love for you, or you fall in the category of those who are dead, who Christ wants to make alive. That's it. There is no other category. There's not a category of people who are spiritually dead that he wants them to stay dead. And there's not people who are sort of spiritually alive. These are the categories. You are today, as you sit in this room, you are either a person who used to be spiritually dead, who's been resurrected, or you are a person who is spiritually dead, who needs to be resurrected, and that's it. Those are the categories. And so Paul here is encouraging us to remember from where we've come. And I think a lot of times you'll see this. You'll see people who identify, whatever that means, as a Christian. Well, I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian. And you can see in the way they act. You can see in the way they treat their relationship with God. You can see how they treat the relationship with the church, that they have forgotten what it was like to be spiritually dead. And that's where I think about this kid. This kid who's playing professional football, who's riding in that car, and in the commercial, he's riding this car, and there's a boy running down the street, and he's saying, "Man, I wish I could go back and tell that kid it's going to be okay. You keep working hard, and it's going to work out. It's going to be okay. Don't give up. Don't quit on your dream. You're going to get there." He says, "I wish I could go back and tell that kid those things." And as you listen to him, he says, "I never, you know, some people, when we have bad stuff in our past, you know what some of us want to do? We don't want to think of it. We don't want to remember it. We don't want to remember it. We don't want to think about those times we were spiritually dead. I don't want to think about those." But here's the problem. When we do not remember from where we have come, we are more likely to end up back in that place. We are more likely to end up there. And so as Christians, as we sit here today and we're like, "Oh yeah, man, spiritually dead. I remember that. I don't like to think about that. Those were not good times." But when we forget that, when we sit in a room as Christians and we forget from whence we've come, well then, what happens to us? Well, I think sometimes our appreciation of our resurrection diminishes when we forget that we were resurrected. Any of you ever had a gift that at some point you stopped being grateful for it? When I was 15, one night, Mom and Dad had been out of town. They come home, and Dad says, "Go out in the yard." I was like, "What'd I do? How can you kick me out of the house? You just got home. You don't even know what I've done yet." So I go outside. I go outside in the yard, and I walk out in the yard, and there sits a car. It was a piece of junk. Now you'll understand in a minute. It was a 67 Mustang. The floorboards in the car were rusted out. The only thing between my feet and Fred Flintstone was carpet. It did not have air conditioning, unless you're going 55 miles an hour and you could get the window down. That was the AC. It didn't even have an FM radio. It did not have power steering. Of course, it was a 67 Mustang. Of course, it didn't have power steering or power brakes. Someone had gone around it with a key and scratched it all the way around the car. That's a scratch. It's okay, Jimmy. It has a happy ending, man. It's okay. I walked outside, and you know what that thing looked like to me? That was the best thing I'd ever seen in my life. That was the greatest car I had ever seen. It was, you know why it was fantastic? Because it was mine. And trust me, when you lived in Crestwell, a car was your ticket to McDonald's because you had to go to Plymouth to get chicken nuggets. I mean, you didn't have those in Crestwell without a car. That's a long walk down Newland Road. So, I mean, that car, man, that thing was beautiful to me. Now, as I'm older now, and I've had nicer cars as I've gotten older, when I look back at that car's not very impressive unless I remember that it was my first car. You know, I have to remember context, because every car I've had since then, by every measurable definition, has been nicer. Power steering, power brakes, air conditioning, generally not a scratch all the way around it. By the way, we did get it painted. But every car I've had since then has definitively been nicer by every measurable standard. And so if I forget that I was 15 and that was my first car, then without that context, that car is not very impressive. But when I remember from where I came, when I remember, then that was my first car. And man, at that time, I was thrilled to have it. I didn't have a driver's license yet. I was 15. I remember that night. I got the key. I got the key and I sat in it. I sat in the car. I went and sat in the car and I cranked it up. And I sat in the driveway pretending to drive the car. This is the greatest thing ever. This is the greatest car ever. Context is everything. And so as we sit here today and we can, it's very easy for us as Christians to become grossly unappreciative of our salvation, of our relationship with Christ. It's very easy to take it for granted because we're like, oh, well, you know, church, I can go anytime and it doesn't really matter if I'm there or not. Or, you know, I can pray whenever I want to. It's not like I have to do it today because I can always do it tomorrow, and I can read my Bible whenever I want to, and it's not really that big a deal and it's not really that important. But when you stop and you remember that once upon a time, you were dead. You weren't sick. You weren't on life support. You were dead. That Christ, because of his incredible love for you, made you alive again. He resurrected you. He brought you back from the dead. Now, if that was it, that'd be enough, right? If that was it, if he didn't do anything else for us, that'd be enough. But Paul says, but wait, there's more. He says, so even when we were dead in our transgressions, he made us alive together with Christ. By grace you've been saved. And then he says this. Not only did he resurrect you, but in verse 6 Paul says, and he raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus, so that in the ages to come he might show the surpassing riches of his grace and kindness towards us in Christ Jesus. So this is kind of a two-stage thing. So we think about this as we go to the, as I was at these funerals yesterday, and I was thinking about this verse, and all this was kind of running around in my head, and I'm thinking, so here's the thing. We act like what happens is, here's the process. We die, and then we're resurrected, and we go to heaven, but that's actually not the process. The process is we're resurrected spiritually. Then we die physically. At some stage that happens. And then when that happens, Paul says, then what happens is we get raised up with him. And in the ages to come, he shows us the passing riches of his grace. And so I'm kind of picturing this is that Gladys and Myrtle are today seeing the surpassing riches of a resurrection that happened years ago. But it was limited in the scope of what they could see because they were tied to this earth. And so Paul says, there's two parts of this. He's going to resurrect you spiritually, and then someday, you're going to receive, in the age to come, man, he's going to show you stuff you can't even imagine. The riches of his grace, he's going to show you stuff you can't even imagine. And so what that does is it reminds us that we are smack dab in the middle of a process. We always want to make everything about an instant. It's everything happens in an instant, but that's not how things work. And so where we are is that if you're a Christian today, that means that you have experienced a spiritual resurrection. That God has taken your dead spirit, which was separated from him by sin, and he has literally, because of the sacrifice of his son, raised you spiritually from the dead. That's already happened if you're a Christian. That's already happened. And now we are in that process. We are waiting for the age to come when he can finally show us everything that he's got for us. Any of you ever got like a partial amount of a gift? Any of you, when you were growing up, Christmas Eve, you got one present. Did that happen to anybody else? It's like Christmas Eve, one present. And in my house, we got all of our stuff on Christmas morning, but on Christmas Eve, we got one present. Guess who got to pick what present I opened? Mom. I'm going to tell you, there were a couple years that I went to bed Christmas Eve, and all I had to show for Christmas Eve was some underwear. I got, and what kind of person, what, now, by the way, I'm 53 now. Underwear for Christmas don't bother me anymore. But when you're nine, it's like, well, it was always clothes. It wasn't always underwear. Sometimes it might be socks. Or here was the really good one, dress pants. You know, because when you're nine, nothing says Christmas Eve like a nice pair of slacks. Now, why didn't Mom let me pick what I got to open? Because she knew I was going to go for the best thing. I was going to go find the... And then Christmas morning, I'd be disappointed because I would have opened the best thing the night before. And she didn't want that to happen, so she started me with drawers. Because there was no place to go but up. If you start with socks or underwear, no place to go but up. You realize that that's exactly what is happening with you and God right now. He is showing you the stuff on this earth that he can show you. And you're like, some of you may be thinking, well, I don't really feel like I'm getting that much right now. Oh, but the best stuff is yet to come. And the stuff we're getting now is great. But Paul says, look, the really good stuff in the ages to come, he's going to show you surpassing riches. He's going to show you stuff you can't even imagine. And that stuff is to come. You can't get it right now. And so as we fellowship here today, and as we think about what all this, what is the impact on us? What has all this got to do with you as an individual? There's a couple of things I want to close with, because I think this is really important. It is always important for us to remember that whether you grew up in church, whether you spent your whole adolescent life going to church, that the reality is the same. Once upon a time, We were, by definition, spiritually dead in our transgressions. And some of us have experienced that recently, and some of us maybe it was a long time ago, but we've all had that time when we were separated from God, and spiritually we were just dead. And Paul says we should never forget that we were in that place once. Because if we forget we were in that place, then we will not appreciate what we have now. We won't appreciate that. So it's important for us to remember once upon a time that we were spiritually dead. But because he loved us, God allowed us to be resurrected, brought back from the dead, made spiritually alive again, and that he is eagerly anticipating the day when he can show you all the amazing things that he's got stored for you that you can't get while you're on this earth. Those things that you can't get them now. If you remember, the guy who wrote this talked once about he had a vision, remember? He said, I don't even know if it was real or it was a vision. He said, but I can't even begin to describe everything I saw. John talks about that a lot in Revelation. He goes, it's hard for me to communicate what I saw because it was so incredibly amazing. I can't even put it in words. That is what awaits us who have been spiritually resurrected. That our resurrection is just part of the process, but there comes a day when we get the full reward that we can't get here. And so my encouragement, you know, to those of you who have recently lost loved ones, and I said we spent some amazing time at Miss Gladys's funeral and Miss Myrtle's funeral yesterday, for the friends and family of those wonderful women. They are opening stuff today. They are opening presents today you cannot imagine. And it's going to, and here's the great thing, their stuff where they are with your name on it. That there's stuff there waiting for you that God is waiting to show you in the age to come. But there's also a warning in this text. There will be people who reject resurrection. That they don't want it. They think that they can find fulfillment in other places. I don't need to be spiritually resurrected. I'm going to find my satisfaction on this earth. I'm going to find my satisfaction in relationships and stuff and possessions and material things. And so I don't need that stuff. And so Paul is very careful in his warning. Don't be that person. Don't be that person. This morning, I want to offer encouragement to you. If you're a Christian today, that you have already been spiritually resurrected, and now it's just about waiting for the day when we get the rest of our stuff, our inheritance, when we go to be with Christ in the heavenly places. And if you're not a Christian today, maybe even a more encouraging thing, all those things that Paul talks about in this text can very easily be yours. Not complicated, not difficult. Christ desires nothing more than to resurrect our dead spiritual selves so that we can be alive in him. We're going to stand and sing our hymn of invitation. I want to encourage you this morning to really understand the benefit and the significance of being resurrected in Christ and being made alive with him. Let's sing our hymn of invitation together this morning.